Thank you. Good afternoon. We're going to talk about some receiver performance things and limitations in different modes. I started testing radios in 1976, and you say, did I wake up one day and decide, I think I'm going to go test radios? And well, it didn't happen that way at all. It was a fluke. I bought a Drake R4C. It had a good review in QST. I used it in 160-meter CW contest, and it was a dud. It flunked what I call CW contest 101. So the question was, well, why was the testing in QST not adequate? Because it obviously didn't approximate the real world. And so I started to investigate that, and being the kind of the techie nerd that I was, dynamic range, which is what we're all really dealing with, and certainly in a contest environment, is the ability to hear weak signals at the same time as strong signals. And the league had been doing this type of testing for a while, and the radios designed in the 60s, the test really worked all right, but then radio architecture started to change, and we found out that really the 20 KC dynamic range test was only testing the front end of the radio. So the first IF in the case of this Drake that started the case of me looking into it was 8 KCs wide, but the upconversion radios that we have, doesn't matter what frequency is, if the first IF is wide, like 6 KCs to 20 kilohertz, you've got a lot of signals in there to integrate. And the 20 KC test doesn't test this to anything but the front end. So what was the best thing to do? We had to change the test because we have to make the test valid. So I decided instead of doing a 20 KC test, move those two signals in closer, 2 KCs apart, so they got through that first IF filter and downstream into the amplifiers and the mixers, and then we're really going to test things. So here's a lot of things we've sort of been talking about over the weekend. I'm not going to talk about all these, but what is important? A high dynamic range, so we can copy the S1 signal in a crowded band. A low noise floor. Now, noise floor is really not a problem except like on 15, 12, and 10, but that's one aspect. Low phase noise. We've had phase noise mentioned several times today. We don't want spurious on receiver transmit. We certainly want a clean signal. We don't want a lot of IMD to bother our neighbors. Of course, we want a good speech processor, good audio quality for intelligibility, and low fatigue, because if we're going to sit there for 48 hours, we don't want to be fatigued. A smooth AGC, and that's been a problem. I talked about that last year at Dayton. A lot of the radios that come out since 2003 have a really tend to exaggerate any type of impulse noise, and this is a problem, and Ellicraft's been the only one that's really paid attention to that, but it's something that needs work. We want good ergonomics, of course, and we've been talking about ergonomics all day. You can't be trying to push three buttons to do something simple. So for me, just the radio itself, we want good ergonomics. And, of course, we want a display that shows information we need. So from a contesting standpoint, what two numbers are most important? We'll say noise floor. With the caveat, we have to know the noise floor to calculate the dynamic range. So I'm going to say dynamic range, that's a big deal number, but we certainly have to be able to copy the weak signals up on the top end, you know, 10 meters, 12 meters. So what is noise floor? You're probably all familiar with sensitivity, and that's been around since the 40s. And sensitivity was a 10 dB signal plus noise to noise. You'd put a signal generator into the radio, adjust the level so when you tuned in the signal and then tuned away, that difference was 10 dB. And that has been sensitivity since day one. Well, noise floor is just a 3 dB difference. You feed in a signal, you tune it in, you tune away, you see that, adjust that signal generator so it shows a 3 dB difference, and that defines the noise floor. In other words, the weakest signal that's, you can copy below the noise floor, but that's the definition. You can hear somewhat below that, but that's what we're really going to call the low end. Now, noise floor is bandwidth dependent, so you can measure noise floor with a sideband filter, a CW filter. The league normally just publishes it for the CW, but it is bandwidth dependent, and that's why the league has now been publishing noise figure, something that you VHF guys know about, but wasn't particularly well known for the HFers. So a radio from an overload standpoint, third order distortion products are the biggest problem. And there's a simple mathematical relationship. Of course, in the real world, there's all sorts of signals in the band, but we're going to test it in the lab to come up with a number. So if we have two signals that are 2 KCs apart, the intermod products are going to be two KCs in the opposite direction. So two KCs up from the high frequency signal and two KCs down from the low frequency signal. So we know where to look for that product. If we're testing a 20 KC, it's going to be 20 KCs up and 20 KCs down. So that's real. We know exactly where we're looking for that product. So what is dynamic range? It's a number in dB of the strongest signals that we can hopefully not be hearing versus the weakest ones, you know, all happening at the same time. And we're going to talk about wide-space dynamic range, close-space dynamic range, and why the close space is so much more important for you CW contesters, and for the sideband operators is not as important, and why that is. So let's look at a typical front end of a radio today. They're almost all left conversion. And it's got a first IF filter that's, say, 15 KCs wide. We know the spacing, and we tune in the product. We see what the league did in the early days. We didn't have radios of this type, and the 20 KC testing did fine. But now, with the new designs of, we'll just say, the typical up conversion radio, we tuned in that distortion product, and look, that roofing filter is going to knock down the close signal quite a bit, and the one that's 40 KCs away isn't even going to get through the front end. So you can see that you're just testing maybe the first mixture, and that's certainly not the whole story. So what I did there in 1976 was say, well, I've got to squeeze these signals closer together, and I picked two KCs for a simple reason. I had that Drake that didn't work. It had an 8 KC filter, so I had to stick the signals two KCs apart, and in order for them to go through the 8 KC filter and tune in the signal. And there suddenly the numbers were vastly different than what appeared in QSD. So I thought, well, now what if we could just switch out that in the Drake case an 8 KC filter, or if in another radio like a wider one, if you could switch that out and we could switch in a narrower filter, and I'd usually say, well, let's make it slightly wider than whatever CW bandwidth we're going to use. So I put in a 600 Hz filter and instead of the 8 KC, and then suddenly the radio rejected most of the signals right off the bat. So let's get an idea for when it's a problem, because you say, well, I've got a radio, it showed up in QST, I look at the numbers, but what does that really mean? Let's take a typical radio, S9 is supposed to be 50 microvolts, and a lot of the newer radios it really is. And we're going to have a 500 Hz CW filter and a noise floor of minus 128. We're going to keep the preamp off, because if we're in an overload situation, a big contest, we want the preamp off at all costs. So if the radio we own, let's say it's an FT-101, that's kind of an old one, but it had a dynamic range of 60 dB, that means by looking at the chart there that if it was 5 over 9, we'd start to have a problem. And the way that intermod works, it doesn't go up linearly. If the signal went up 10 dB more, the intermod would go up 30 dB more. So it's kind of like a hockey stick. It goes along and then suddenly, whoosh, it shoots off. Most radios that were designed, let's say, between 5 and 25 years ago had a wide-space dynamic range in the 90s, but the close-in number, which wasn't published for a long time. I mean, I was doing it since 1977, and no one else was talking about that. So they were mostly around 70 dB, and that's sort of like your Pro 2 and your Pro 3. And so that means, in that case, at 15 over 9, we would start to see the problem, and that if they were, you know, 10 dB stronger than that, you'd really notice it. Nothing much changed for a long time until the Orion came out, and that had a dynamic range of a 93, and that was a big deal because that was a big shift. So suddenly we had a dynamic range around 90 or so, which means signals had to be up around, you know, 35 over, approaching 40 over to start causing a problem. So that was a shift in performance level. So let me talk about the dynamic range window. This is not fixed. We've got so many dB, whatever it is. If it's 70, fine. If it's 80, fine. But we can move this around. And this, if you take nothing from this talk but realize, move that dynamic range window around to your advantage. If we're on a noisy band, 40 meters, 80 meters, certainly 160, and our S meter is reading S6 with just noise, well, then there's no reason to be submitting the radio to signals on top of that. So let's attenuate everything. Punch in your 6 dB pad or your 10 dB pad. And if your S meter dropped from S6 to S2, S1, well, then that's not you haven't lost anything. So utilize that window. Now, if you're on 10 meters, hopefully in the next few years, you don't have the type of QRM problem, and so you've got a weak signal condition. Well, you can put on your preamp. Move that dynamic range down more towards sensitivity in the lower bands. Use your attenuator to move it up to minimize overload capabilities. I'm going to talk just briefly about third-order intercept. On my website, I don't publish that number. It's a theoretical number, and I think it's a really useful number for certain things, like a preamp, a block amplifier, or a mixer. In the industrial world, mixers are always specified by third-order intercept, but it's just one little device. But if we're testing a radio, and it's got the AGC involved, well, then all bets are off. So let's look at the FT2000D. This information came from QST, October 2007. And the radio tested at wide spaces. It had a 98 dB dynamic range. No one could complain about that. That's a plus 25 intercept. Obviously, that's a good number. And then, of course, we go to the 2KC test, which gets inside the window, first IF roofing filter. Well, it dropped from 98 to 69, and the intercept went from plus 25 to minus 19. So you can see that was the number you really need to take a peek at for the CW contester, so the fact that it dropped off that much. But then in the last, in less than the last year, for some unknown reason, QSC decided to test radios in addition to that at 0 dBm. Now that's a really strong signal. That's 73 over S9. And not only, see, the dynamic range dropped from 69, which isn't very good, to 29, but the intercept went up to plus 15 because the intermod was probably 60 over 9. So I don't know what the heck the league thinks they're doing here. It's a useless number, and it sort of masked the real numbers you need to look at. And I was on the steering committee with the league. There'd been problems with the league for a while, particularly with the FT1000D. The blocking numbers were just plain wrong. So there were a group of hams got together and said, you guys got to fix your problems. We don't want numbers that are meaningless. And for almost 4 years, we sort of banged away at it. And I felt I was sort of banging my head against the wall because things that I found that were causing problems nobody wanted to talk about it. So, and then after I finally threw in the towel, they came out with this thing. So I don't even know where it came from. But this 0 dBm testing, it's useless information. If it's a good radio, you get a big number. If it's a terrible radio, you get a big number. So I don't know what the point is. Let's look at, again, this window. We'll look at intercept, and then we'll sort of get off the subject. But here was another radio that came out in 2008, FT950. With no preamp, it measured a 95 dB dynamic range. Now, that's the white space number. With the preamp on, they said it went to 90, from 94 to 95. That's probably actually an error because you don't really get a better dynamic range by putting on a preamp, but that's just within statistical error. So let's say it's just constant. So preamp 1, 95. Preamp 2, 95. They didn't publish this, but of course you turn the attenuators on. That doesn't change the dynamic range. It just moves it. It moves this window around for either less overload, more sensitivity, however you need it. Well, look at the intercept number on the right there. With second preamp on, the intercept's only plus 4. With no preamp, it's plus 22. With the maximum attenuation, it's plus 40. So you can see that is the one thing, if you're going to think about intercept, that the intercept moves all over the map by adjusting the gain, either with your preamp or your attenuator. But it's really just better to say, what's the dynamic range? It's constant. So that's if you want to buy a radio with a big number, you want that constant number, and that's where I'd look. Blocking is what started that steering committee at the league, but blocking isn't usually a problem for most of us. If we climb up on our tower and go fix our rotor and we see another ham over there a mile or two away, and particularly if he's on like 160 or 75 or 80 meters, blocking can be an issue. Certainly for field day, it's a big problem. We've got, 10 transmitters and something the size of a football field, and the multi guys, they've got all sorts of difficulties. They've got to put all sorts of band pass filters in to cut the signals down from the other band. So blocking is a big deal there. But for most of us, most of the time, blocking is not. Phase noise is something we've only had to deal with since synthesized radios came about. Drake TR4 or Collins S-Line, that didn't have phase noise. I mean, it certainly had some level of noise, but phase noise really came about with synthesizers. We'd like to have a perfect receiver, and certainly radios have improved from the early days of synthesizers, but we can't do much about it, because even if we had the perfect radio, or we said, I'm a purist, I'm going to have a non-synthesized radio and use that, if everybody else is transmitting with their synthesized radio, there's transmitted phase noise. And so it's just sort of out there. It's kind of like a guy splattering with his amplifier. It's there, and we can't fix it, and our receiver can't fix it. So now let's move from CW to sideband and see why the requirements for dynamic range aren't as stringent. I decided to test my transmitters and see which one was the cleanest, and this brand new Collins 32S3, well, it's not brand new, it was built in 1968, but that's the cleanest transmitter in my shack. And it's got 6146s in it and negative feedback. In the older days in QST and in any laboratory, when you measure intermod, you feed in two signals, and this is we're measuring the transmitter power amp intermodulation. We put in two signals and we see where the third order products are, or the fifth order or the seventh order. In this case, in the Collins, it was 36 dB down from the two tones, and that's good. And as we see, the higher order products fall off. And so that was easily reproducible. I've had another couple friends say, well, I had a KWM2, and I measured it, and I got a number over 40. So maybe mine needs a little tweaking, but this is still a good number. And then I tested another radio in my shack that's much newer. And there's a 100-watt, 12-volt, 13.8-volt Class B amplifier, and a little bit different there. I mean, not only instead of being 36, it's 27, but look how the high-order products are. Almost looks like a Christmas tree or something. So look at it again. See, not too many, and they fall off quickly. And there's a very typical modern transceiver, and you can see we haven't made a lot of progress there. that was a K3.
Go back to that. Now go back one more. Are you two tones the same distance apart?
They're not exactly the same distance apart. This one, they're 1.9 kilohertz apart, and we see the span is 40 kilohertz. And it's also 40 kilohertz, but the tones are closer together. Those are the two tones that come out of the built-in two-tone test. And the K3 has a test generator built right in it. This was measured about 6 weeks ago. And firmware may have some minor effect, but my guess is there may be somewhat more complex than that. So now I say, well, is that all we're stuck with? You know, I don't really don't want to use my S-line in the contest, but it was clean. So there are some radios that are Class A. I think they're only Yaesu, the Mark V. This belongs to W6XX that sent me this shot. The 2000D. And I think the Mark V Field, but it's only a 100-watt rig. Really, to have a practical Class A transceiver, it needs to be a 200-watt transceiver in Class B that'll put out 75 watts in Class A. And that'll drive some amplifiers, a lot of amplifiers. It won't drive maybe 3500Zs in grounded grid, but it has adequate output. The 25 or 30 watts out of the Mark V Field, I don't know what you do with that. If you say, well, that's nice, look at the numbers, 42 dB down, fantastic. The fifth order, you can hardly even see it on the scope there. But you say, I'm not going to get on the contest and run that because I need an amplifier. So here's Pete's 8877. It degraded at only 2 dB. It still has some higher order products, but it's still way better than the typical Class B amplifier. So also, let's look at another example. So you say, well, maybe that was just a fluke. Here's out of QST, the FT450. And as I said early on, in the early days of QST and any time in the lab, you measure distortion products, the two tones versus, say, the third order or the fifth order. But for some reason, I guess OEMs like big numbers. Everybody likes 100 dB dynamic range as opposed to 80, so we like better intermodulation numbers. So they decide, let's measure it versus PEP. So that means you have to add 6 dB to what you measure off the scope, or you measure it in such a way that you start at 6 dB down from the top. So I had to add 6 dB to the numbers on the left on the Collins, and there's the numbers right out of QST on the FT450. So the Collins there was 12 dB better on third order and 24 dB better on seventh order, and we're going to look at a seventh order product in a moment, and 29 dB better on the ninth order. So that's just kind of a shame, but that's where we are. So yeah, that follows the same idea that, you know, the new ones at 12 volts aren't as good. Now, somebody mentioned they had a pair of 781s, and I have a 781, and that runs on 32 volts, and that's significantly easier to design a PA it runs on 32 volts and 12 volts to try to get the intermod under control. So let's say, okay, there's this Collins signal, and it's got the seventh order was 60 dB down. Now, admittedly, those tones are 1.9 kc's apart, so I wanted to make them spread out. That's going to be like in the sibilants. You're going to say CQDX, CQ something. You know, the S's and all, that's going to what's going to spit. So that intermod product isn't going to be there like a tone just sitting there, but we're going to use that as an example, and we're tuned off 5 kc's, and that's 60 dB down. And also, just a few days ago, Pete took his Mark V and put in white noise. In addition to he'd done this measurement on his Mark V, he said, I'm going to put white noise in it and see what it does. And in this case, at 5 kc's away, the white noise in Class B was 60 dB down. In Class A, it didn't exist at all. I mean, it just like fell off. So we sort of got this 60 dB number two different ways, one with the white noise on a Mark V in Class B, and one of this Collins with the two tones. So almost all the radios are better than 60. So you can see on sideband, usually the problem is something else. It's the guy's transmitter. It isn't the dynamic range of the receiver. Not saying we don't care what it is, but and admittedly, you can squeeze in closer than 5 kilohertz because the guy's not just doesn't have continuous talking and continuous sibilance all the time. But you can see that that's the reason that the dynamic range is less stringent for sideband because we have the transmitted products. Of course, if we're all running Class A, that'd be a different story in an 8877, which is a very linear tube. Well, you can mess that up. I mean, well, certainly we'll talk about that, but you can screw up your signal a lot of ways. I mean, besides just the Class B amplifier. So I'll get to that in a moment. As a matter of fact, here's the slide. Okay, so we've got steady state measurements, and we want as clean as possible. But there's also ALC-induced distortion. This didn't used to be a problem. The Drake had ALC. I'm sure the Heathkit did. The S-Line even has a meter on it. You can see how much ALC you're running. It was just a negative voltage that went back to a grid of a tube. You could drive the meter on the 32S3 up to the pin, and it didn't splatter. But unfortunately, a lot of the solid-state rigs today, the ALC is not quite as forgiving. And matter of fact, my mobile rig is a nice little mobile rig. I don't have my TR4 in the car anymore for some reason. And I got jumped on in 20 meters, it was a couple years ago. And this guy says, you're interfering with our net. And I said, well, where's your net? And he says, it's 4 kc's down the band. And I said, look, I'm running 100 watts. I've got an 8-foot antenna, and you're telling me I'm bothering your net? And he says, yeah, you are. So I took the rig back to the house and looked at it on the spectrum analyzer and listened on another receiver. And the way it came out of the box, the ALC reading was like way, you know, 2/3 upscale. And I found if I more than just wiggled 2 or 3 divisions on the little LCD thing, I was splattering with my mobile rig. So we're like, oh, that's the way it is. So that's something that the league hasn't wanted to talk about either. The SM5BSZ, I don't know if any of you heard of the Linrad, but it's a SDR type of radio, and it's written in Linux, obviously. And he's been trying to get the league to look at dynamic splatter. And I was telling the league, you need to look at dynamic splatter. Okay, do your two-tone test, that's fine, but that isn't the problem, the entire problem. You've got lots of things that can cause a splatter, whether it's ALC-induced or just a lousy amplifier, or if it's the processor's just turned up crazy. So, but they didn't want to touch it. So, again, I don't know what the league's decisions on what's important and what's not. And they won't even talk about this ALC AGC problem, receiver AGC problem that I was talking about at Dayton last year, that a pop from an electric fence might read 10 over 9 on one radio, and an old radio from 10 years ago, or a Pro 3 even, doesn't even move the S meter. So some things are getting press and some things are not. So a lot of radios now today, well, not a lot, some, the newer ones, have roofing filters and maybe multiple roofing filters. So how many do you need? Do we need to throw all our radios away? Well, luckily we don't. In sideband, a single 15 kc filter is adequate. It's not perfect, but it's adequate. And this makes sense. I mean, if we've been buying radios, upconversion radios now for 25 years, and they didn't work at all, we wouldn't be buying them. And radios that were the similar design, the Drake 7 line, the S line, the 830, the 930, I'm not the 830, the 930, the FT1000, anything, they pretty much same type of performance. But would we rather have a 2.7 kc roofing filter if our radio had such a thing? Yes. Which ones do? Well, the K3, the Orion, the Omni 7, It's got a slightly different design. It's called a distributed roofing filter in the Omni 7. They have a 20 KC filter, but then they have really low gain. They clear down to 455 kilohertz, put in a Collins 2.6 or a Collins 500 or a Collins 300, and then they go to DSP. And then, of course, there's the Hilburn that most of us probably saw last year, still hasn't shipped. I certainly hope it ships this year, and that's got a 2.7 kilohertz at VHF, which is phenomenal, but it's still been vaporware. Hopefully that changes. Now, CW signals don't have IMD. They're not going to be 3, 4, 5 KCs wide. So you can get a lot closer to a really strong CW guy that's, KC away or something. But a CW signal still has bandwidth, and we're going to look at that in a moment. If it was a dead carrier, it wouldn't have much bandwidth, but hopefully we're sending something, the guy's call anyway. So let's just look one more time at sideband and the filters. If you have the answer yes, your radio provides that, you'd rather the roofing filter be about the same bandwidth as the DSP. A little wider is okay, but you don't want a whole lot wider. And even though we showed that from the standpoint of transmitted IMD, we're probably not going to have a big difference from a standpoint of dynamic range of the receiver switching in that sideband roofing filter. But anytime we put the selectivity up front as opposed to way at the end, that's better. In the case of the Omni 7, it really needs it because the DSP just doesn't cut it all by itself. That roofing, those distributed roofing filters do a great job. And of course, the Orion's got a 1.8, the K3's got a 2.1 and a 1.8. So if it's out there, use it. And particularly if it's a DSP radio, because that DSP is having to do a whole lot of stuff. If you can take 90% of the signals and wipe it out before it gets to the DSP, that's great. So the change in roofing filters for sideband, it's nice to have them there, but it's just not as dramatic as on CW. So back to CW signals. We've seen the case where the IM products are the problem on sideband, but how's it compare? And how close can we really work to that guy who's 40, 50 over 9? So I decided to do it two ways. Of course, I'm a techie nerd. I've got spectrum analyzers, but I said, let's test it with the radio in addition to the spectrum analyzer. So I took a K3 that was on loan. It had a 400 hertz 8-pole roofing filter in it, and the DSP dialed into 400 hertz. And I took an Omni 7, which just happens to be on loan from Tentec, and I'm going to use that for the transmitter because it's got a menu that lets you adjust the rise time and the fall time on CW. Just punch the button, go in, and turn the knob. So I put the Omni 7 transmitting in through an attenuator, of course, and feeding it into the K3. And tuned on frequency, it was set at S9 plus 40, minus 33 dBm. And then I tuned away 700 hertz on the K3. And with the Omni set for a rise time of 3 milliseconds, which was as fast as it goes, well, the signal read S7 on the K3. If I set it at 6 milliseconds, which was the default, the way it comes from the factory, it dropped 2 S units down to S5. And if I slowed it clear down to 10 milliseconds, it dropped clear down to S3. So that's over 20 dB difference in how strong that signal was in my passband 700 hertz away. So let's look at it from a lab standpoint. So I looked at it with my spectrum analyzer. So it's 70 dB down, 70. That 10 millisecond rise time CW signal has a bandwidth of 900 hertz. If we do it at 3 millisecond rise time, the bandwidth jumps clear up to 1500 hertz. So let's superimpose those two signals. And there we have it. We've got the upper trace is the 3 millisecond rise time, the lower trace is the 10. And so there's our passband of our filter. And the difference there, right on the scope, 20 dB. So virtually the same thing we got on the receiver measurement. So you can see how you're going to be a lot happier if that other guy who's 40 over 9 running his transceiver, rise time is a lot slower. Now you might say 10 milliseconds is too soft. It does sound differently, and there are some radios that are worse. I think the biggest problem, like W8JI has been complaining about this, the key clicks on an FT1000 series for years, and he could like fix it for $2. But it might even be 1 millisecond. So you can see a big difference in how friendly you are depending on the rise time. Now, you all don't have spectrum analyzers. I realize that. So here's what it looks like with a normal scope. This is in the time domain instead of the frequency domain. And you can see the one on the left That's the 3 millisecond rise time. Well, according to the dial, it actually, on the scope, looks closer to 2. And the right one with the nice slope on it, that's 10 milliseconds, which on the really comes out closer to 8. But you can see why it makes such a difference. You're keying away at 30 words per minute, and that rise time just makes all the difference in the bandwidth of our CW signal. So people ask me, well, how many poles do I need in my roofing filter? You know, the real answer is, it doesn't matter. The Orion 2 has 4-pole filters now. I was involved in redesigning the Orion 1, which when it came out was 93 dB. It was a big deal. The 1KC filter was wonderful. The wider ones were wonderful, but you switched in their 500 Hertz filter, and they'd made a bad engineering decision, and they had a lot of insertion loss, and they say, well, we're going to make up for that. We'll put in some amplifiers before and after the filter. And when you switched in the 500 Hertz filter in the Orion 1, the dynamic range dropped from 93 to like 78, which was like, well, the whole point was to have this radio was great for CW. So I worked with Jack Birchfield, and we redesigned the front end, and I said, send me a prototype, just build it this way, and I'll try it out. And I tried it out, and it worked real well. So then they, in amongst the other things, they obviously changed the Orion 2. They redesigned the front end the way I asked them to do it, and they even put all the roofing filters in the same frequency, which they hadn't done before. I said, let the guy decide whatever he wants to buy. He can go to Interad and probably buy anything known to man. And so he did, and so all the filters on the same frequency, so you can load it up any way you like. The Elecraft has 5-pole and 8-pole. They call the 5-pole economy, but they work fine. And the 8-pole are more expensive, and they work fine. They have more loss, though. And in 1976, when I came out with the roofing filter for the Drake, I picked 6-poles because the insertion loss was only 2 dB more than the 8KC filter. And I figured anybody will give up 2 dB to get rid of all sorts of problems in the Drake. So even though it took like 30 years or 25 years or something for it to become a commercial idea, you know, the idea of the roofing filter is you got to knock the signal down. It doesn't really matter number of poles. It isn't the shape factor thing. Since the K3 is kind of the new kid on the block at the moment, I thought you might like a little more information on the K3. The dynamic range varies a little bit with the roofing filter. You can see it goes between 95 with the 500 Hertz roofing filter up to 101 with the 200 Hertz roofing filter. You can't even hear intermod with the 200 Hertz filter. It's all phase noise limited. So if Elecraft could improve their synthesizer a little bit, 3 or 4 dB, that number would go up. And that was the first time it ever measured a radio that had a close-in dynamic range of 100 dB. It was just astounding. But even if you say, well, I'm going to use the 500 Hertz filter, you've got now 3 radios with numbers, you know, dynamic ranges in the 95 and up range. So let's just look at the facts. From a dynamic range standpoint, what do we want a roofing filter to do? We want it to knock the guy down that's 40 over 9 to 10 over 9, S9, something like that. And so all the radios that offer it, it does the job. But you still, there's a limit, and you say, well, can I really work a guy who is S2 when this interfering signal is 40 over 9? And if he's 700 hertz away, we saw that that was limited by his transmitted bandwidth because he's keying that signal on and off. So the perfect radio still has a limit. And in reality, the radios that now are offering dynamic ranges in the 90s, at close in, they're limited pretty much by the roofing filter. Anything can have nonlinearity, crystals, inductors, obviously amplifiers. So, you know, there's a limit to everything. We're pretty much at it now with the limit is the filter itself. So let's look at some conclusions. Contesters and DX operators, any dividing in a pileup situation, we obviously need a good receiver on sideband. We need a better one on CW. And way back in 76, I didn't call it a roofing filter. I just called it a front-end filter. I did that in the Drake. And then clear in 2003, Orion came out, and that idea in a totally solid-state radio really you know, kind of took the world by storm. Now, Elecraft's been out there now for a little less, well, I think they started shipping in like October, November. And they've got up to 10 roofing filters if you buy the secondary receiver. So they've got a lot of choices. So 25 years of upconversion radios have given us dynamic ranges. We expect them in the mid-90s. That's wide-spaced. But unfortunately, they were all dropping down about 25 dB when we got in close, which is what's important for your CW contesters, but not such a big deal for the sideband guys. So then the FTDX 9000 came out, and it had a 3KC roofing filter in it, And obviously 3 is better than 15. Then the 7800 came out as with their upgrade, and they had a 3KC filter, but you measured it and it was a little over 5. And the 6KC filter was a little over 11. So you're saying, oh, that's funny. And then the FT2000 came out, and the 3KC filter measured 7. And all sorts of people measured it at 7, and the league, even in the review in QST, said they couldn't tell any difference between the 3 and the 6. Of course, if they were both 7, it didn't matter. Now, the one that was loaned to me by a guy in that specific sample, in his radio, when I punched in the nominal 3KC filter, the intermod got 9 dB worse. So that was annoying, but see, that's just what that intermod was being caused in the filter itself, and there's variations. And I found testing, when I was doing all this testing for Tentec, I was really stumped one time. I said, I measured that radio this morning, and now it's the afternoon. I don't get the same numbers. And I found that if I took the filter out and turned it around 180 degrees, because it'd plug in either way, I got different numbers sometimes. And I tried 4 different filters, and I got different numbers in all the filters. So not enormous differences, but, you know, several dB. And, for instance, if you've got a crystal filter and you've got one filter that's not really up to spec, because it maybe got some contamination on it. So if that's in the front and it's causing some intermod, then, of course, it measured worse. But if you turned it around 180 degrees, then that bad crystal was at the end. It had already gone through 3 other crystals or 5 other crystals, and so it wasn't being stimulated as much, and the intermod went down. So that was interesting, that if things are that much limited by just the crystal filter itself. So you say, well, why don't we have a 1KC filter in our up conversion radios? And it really comes down to, what is the fractional bandwidth of your filter? It's just physics as to what we can build. We all know anybody can build a 500 hertz filter at 5 megahertz, but fractionally, that'd be a 1KC filter at 10, or a 20 kilohertz, a 2KC filter at 20, or a 4KC filter at 40, or an 8KC filter at 80. Well, let's look at some of the radios. The FTDX 9000 has the IF at 40 megahertz. So they have this 3KC filter. Well, that fits. We said, well, fractionally, it'd be a 4KC filter at 40, but we know we can make a filter narrower than 500 hertz at 5. So making a 3 kilohertz filter at 40 megahertz is not a big deal. But then we go double it again and go up towards 70 megahertz. Well, we can't make a filter up there to keep the insertion loss under control. So we're stuck with a filter that's probably almost twice as wide. And in reality, that's what we're getting. But then if we're down at the 5, 8, 9 megahertz ranges, like the Orion and the K3, and then what I did there in 1976, we can make filters all day that are as narrow as we want. Now, the only other radio that's absolutely totally different, well, probably not the only one, but was the Flex. And I got to see a Flex last summer, and I called up Flex and said, I need to see something, and they said, well, we're not shipping it. And I had to review the Flex 5000 for Passport to World Band Radio that I write for that book. And so they sent me a SDR 1000. I said, at least let me figure out your software and get some kind of handle on this thing. And of course, the SDR 1000 has the DSPs and your sound card and your computer, and they had wires running everywhere. But I got it to work, and I played with that for a while. And then finally, for all of 10 days in August, I got a Flex 5000. And my concern was, this radio is totally different. What if my testing is meaningless? Because we'd already found that way back in the 70s, the testing with 20KC was okay for a radio that was being sold in the 60s, but we got a little ways into the 70s, and it wasn't valid anymore. So I thought, oh, man, this is going to be another mess. But it didn't seem to be. The radio tested fine. It had a 96 dB dynamic range, and it didn't matter whether it was 2 kilohertz or 5 kilohertz or 20 kilohertz. It doesn't have any filters at all on the front end. So I said, well, it seems like it's fine, but I wonder what happens in the real world. So they started using them out there in the contest world, and it seems to be working fine. So I guess the numbers are valid. It does have some spurious in it that uses DDS, and there are some spurs that come and go. They're not very strong, but they move around. You like tune it a KC, and that spur goes away. And you move another KC, and it goes somewhere else. But the spurs aren't a big problem. The SDR 1000, the spurs are a problem, but not on the 5000. So it's kind of a trade-off. We need a computer. I mean, like, maybe you've got a lucky computer anyway, but in my case, it's an old 2.4 gigahertz that's 4 years old, so it's worth $100. But to run the SDR5000, you need like a $1,000 computer and a monitor. So you got that amount of money. But if you buy a K3, you can spend $1,000 on roofing filters. So you spend your money on roofing filters, you spend it on computers, wherever you like. Just all cost the same amount. So what kind of dynamic range would we like to have for CW? W8JI and I, Tom, both agree that if you've got an 80 dB radio, you're going to be pretty happy with it. Higher is better, but 80 is fine. So you can see in 76, I bumped the R4C up to 84, and that actually was on the top of the chart for over two decades. It was kind of amazing. And then we got other radios there, the 10-Tech at 80, and then the Icon came along, and then the Orion, and that was the big jump. And then the Orion 2 kind of fixed an engineering problem, and that was a tiny bit better. Then the Flex, look at that, the Flex with no filters at all, 96. And then the Omni 7 came along, and that was kind of a price point radio, but it was still good. It was 80 dB, so that'll work fine. If you use the optional filters, don't try to work a contest with the Omni 7 without buying the extra 500 hertz or the 300 hertz filter. I tried to use it in this 160 meter CW contest, and if I switched it to 550 hertz, it switched in the 2.6 kilohertz filter. Whoa, that was a bad idea. The DSP just doesn't cut it. But you put that filter in there, it works great. And then the Yellowcraft came along, and you've got that 95 to 100 dB, depending on which filter is in there. And so, wow, we've got a lot of choices for the CW contesters. So here's some other radios. Just say, well, what other radios are out there? What kind of numbers are there? Then we've got the Yellowcraft K2, and of course, that was almost a cult when it came out. And it's good. It's 80 dB. And the funny thing is, there's an R398. Now, that's not very recently manufactured. But, you know, you had to be on board ship there, and you'd have 10 radios and 10 transmitters all in one boat. And it had to have a good front end, and you can see why it worked. There you see the Pro 3 and the Pro 2 in the mid-70s. The numbers are very slightly. Don't ever worry about 1 or 2 dB difference on a radio. That's sample variation, lab variation, but you want to look at the big picture. The thing that is disappointing is like the FT2000. That's 63. The League measured it at 63 too, and you know, that wouldn't be your first choice for a CW contest radio, that's for sure. And I'm surprised that we get new radios coming out that have numbers in the 60s. That's not going to do the job. There was the Drake 58. You can see why the Drake was bad, 58, and if you put the roofing filter, it went to 84. And there at the bottom of the list is the worst radio I've ever tested. The VR5000, now you say, well, why did I list that in there? Well, actually, QST reviewed it, and it's just a receiver, but don't use it for a spotting receiver. The League didn't say it was the worst radio they ever tested, but they did say it wasn't a contest radio, so don't buy it. One thing I'm going to touch on here at the end, fatigue, it's been mentioned today, it's kind of the forgotten spec, audio quality. I've had two transceivers in my shack that I felt gave me a headache, and I could listen to the tone on the quality of the CW note, and it wasn't pure, or on sideband, it just sounded harsh. And I talked to a guy I talked to every week, and he just had this edginess to it. Well, if you look at any review in QST or any spec sheet on any radio, it's going to say the audio puts out 2-point-some watts at 10% distortion. Now, you can't buy a chip from any IC manufacturer that's got a, you know, audio power amp that's rated at 10% distortion. The only way to get 10% distortion is to run it into clipping. Now, can you imagine a hi-fi amplifier being spec? This puts out 200 watts at 10% distortion. You get laughed off the face of the earth. But for some reason, we're putting up with this nonsense instead of saying, well, let's say, what is it at 1%? And, you know, we all know that an amplifier running on 12 volts isn't going to put out much more than about 2 watts. So we really want to know what's the distortion like. Well, what makes radio sound harsh, at least to me, and luckily I haven't been subjected to a lot of noise over my lifetime, so I still have very good hearing up past 10 kilohertz. Either odd order harmonics really sound bad, or intermodulation. The brain is a fantastic spectrum analyzer. It can hear products that are 70 dB down with no problem, assuming you don't have a hearing loss, and those shouldn't be there. So any product detector and audio amplifier will meet 10%. It'll probably meet 1% if you don't drive it into clipping. So this spec that we get is meaningless and it covers up if there is something wrong with the radio. It'll still probably pass spec. So this is really crazy. So I decided, let's look at these radios that I don't like the sound of, because the one in case was listening to the CW contest, and I think I was actually listening to that VP6 or whatever it was. And the second harmonic was 55 dB down. On a radio, it sounded good. And the third harmonic was 68 dB down. And it was pretty clean. I mean, look at that. That's a nice, clean spectrum. And it sounds fine. It sounds perfect. And I say, okay, what's it do on sideband? So to do that, you put in two tones and look at the intermod. There's the third order, 53 dB down. And if you measure it with a wideband distortion meter, or you calculate it, both of those there were, well, actually, back up. That's less than 0.3% on that harmonic, and this is 0.3% on the IMD, and so, you know, we're way under 1% still. But here is the one that was a clinker. This is the one that sounded bad on CW. It didn't have a pure tone at all. And look, 11th order product. That's at 7 kilohertz. It's going up clear to 10, and they're still not stopping. Well, in the broadband distortion meter, it still read at less than 0.3%. So you can see how a joke it is to have a 10% distortion spec when something that sounds bad has 0.3%. So I said, what's this look like on sideband? So I put in the intermodulation tone and said, look at that.
What radio?
That was the K3. This can be fixed. This is not the chip. I had an amplifier for the R4C that had this problem when I first did the prototype, and there wasn't enough copper in the negative return lead on the audio chip. It may have had a milliohm, I don't know, but I didn't lay the board out very well, and it caused horrible distortion, just like this. And all it would take was some little fix like that, because there's no excuse for that. That problem goes away if it's driving a high impedance load. Another ham has one, and he found the same thing, and he plugged in an amplified computer speakers, and I did the same thing, except I happened to use a product of mine. And if it was driving 10K, it didn't have any distortion at all. So there's something, some tiny little mistake, probably in the board layout, that causes this kind of problem. But if you look in QST or all the expanded reports that are on the web, some of them show in-band distortion, but they only show it to 2 kilohertz, 0 to 2, and they put in two signals about 50 or 100 hertz apart. But look at that stuff out. That one goes out to 5 kilohertz, but it keeps on going. That's all that stuff in there shouldn't look like that. It should look like that. So we're putting up with craziness like this, and we're got these fantastic radios with enormous dynamic range, and then they blow it in the audio amplifier. So we need to get the OEMs to listen, meaning get their design engineers to listen and say, I can hear that distortion. Let's fix it. Or listen to us saying, fix it, and get rid of the problem. We've got high dynamic range receivers. We've got good speech processors, and we want big towers. We want to compete. But, if you're sitting there for 40 hours and we're listening to all that distortion, I don't know. It just fries my brain. So we need to have better from the clear the beginning of the radio till the end. What's our time like, Tim?
Think a couple questions.
Okay, so, sir.
You said there were two radios. Which one was the other one?
Okay, it was a Pro 2, but it wasn't a generic problem. My friend had a Pro 2. It didn't have the problem. My Pro 2 did. My Pro 3 did not. What was it? Was it a copper thing and it didn't get etched right? And got a little too much resistance and some return leg on an amplifier? I don't know. So that one was interesting, but in the case, unfortunately, with the K3, W6XX just tested his last week, and same problem. But I've talked to them about it, and they say, we're going to figure it out after Dayton. Yeah. That's driving a speaker load. So as your instructors all said, wear earphones. Well, that'll solve the problem, but when I'm just talking to somebody, I don't always use earphones. Matter of fact, I have to give my ears a rest, and I sometimes switch back and forth. But that was driving a low impedance load. That was the deal. Sir?
I have a 1,000, this is straight MP, the 200-watt MP Mark V.
Okay.
With a pair of 250s, a pair of 500s, and the INRAD roofing filter. Would I be gaining much receiver performance-wise by going up to a K3? Would it be that dramatic? I know the base specs on the Mark V don't look all that good, but you put the roofing filter in there and all the other filters, would I notice a big jump if I spent the money?
On CW? I mean, a sideband, it would be a non-issue. On CW, you'd be going from a 15 kc roofing filter of 4 approximately. Well, that cuts it down by 3/4. So statistically, when the band's full, you know, 160 meter CW contest, that would help. But you're right. Inside that window, it'd still be, I think it's about 50, 65. So it really does go down inside that roofing filter. But it would just statistically happen less. So you might notice the difference. Yes?
What are your two audio tones that you use?
For this type of distortion measurement? Well, we can tell that. In the case of this guy that looks so terrible, that goes 0 to 5 kilohertz, so it was 400 and 700. But it didn't really matter. But that's what those were for that one.
Okay, Ron.
Oh, do you want more? One more? Yeah.
Yes, and Ralph is convincing the XYL to upgrade your hardware. Do you have statistics on some of the other hardware that comes from, like a 765 or anything like that?
There's a lot of data on my website, nc0b.com, and you click on the upper right hand, it says receiver test data. There's about 90 radios there.